I wanted to focus this morning about educational challenges, in particular, the challenge of quantity versus quality, or the challenge of educating an elite versus educating the masses. And this is a constant challenge. We read in Pirkei Avos, "V'ha'amidu talmidim harbe," one should have many students. It sounds like the more students, the better. Some will understand more, some will understand less. But as the pasuk says, we have an obligation, lahagdil Torah, to increase Torah, to spread the Torah, ulahadira, and through that spreading of Torah, we increase the glory of Torah. We make it more special. But on the other hand, we also have statements from our sages, Ma'amari Chazal, that seem to indicate that it's better to have a small group, an elite. Our sages tell us 1,000 come into the yeshiva, but only one emerges as a great giant of Torah. Elef nichnasim, 1,000 come in, ve'echad yotzei, and one emerges. And that's a constant challenge as teachers, as administrators, as educators, as parents. Should we focus on spreading the Torah as widely as possible? If we do so, by definition, we'll have to water it down. To some degree, it'll be more shallow than it really is, more superficial. Or is it better to keep the Torah in its pure, rarefied, exalted, but also difficult essence? And then only fewer will appreciate it, but at least those who appreciate it will get the real experience. When I was a member of the Kollel here in the yeshiva, we once met with Leon Wieseltier, who's the literary editor of the New Republic. And he spoke about how much he appreciated studying the writings of the Rishonim, of the medieval authorities. He said, even though I don't fulfill what they say, but at least when I study them, I know I'm studying the real deal. I know I'm having the real experience. Maybe something's to be said for preserving Torah in its purest, in its most ideal form. And at least everyone who experiences Torah will experience the true greatness of Torah, even though not many will be able to really enjoy it. And actually, this question, there are many, many practical ramifications to it. This question was addressed by Rav Kook in his work, Ein Ayah. Ein Ayah is Rav Kook's commentary to the Ein Yaakov. The Ein Yaakov is a work which collected the agados, the legends, the stories, the explanations of psukim that are found throughout the Talmud, and extracted them. So in the Ein Yaakov, on Tractate Brachos, which is what the yeshiva is studying this semester, you won't find the discussions, the halachic discussions. What is the time for Shema? What are the different opinions as to the time for Shachris? How late can a person daven Shachris? In Ein Yaakov, you'll find the stories, the legends in Masechta Brachos. You'll hear about the groups of angels that sing to Hashem at night. And for many, many generations, Jews would study Ein Yaakov. Certainly in Europe, Jews would come to the shul at night after a day of work, and there would be different chaburos, there would be different groups studying. Some would study Tehillim, some would study Chumash, and some would study Gemara, but others would study Ein Yaakov, read the stories of the Talmud, and study the legends, study the explanations of Psukim, study the Ein Yaakov. What's the role of the Agada? What's the role of the Ein Yaakov? Why does the Talmud include these legends, these stories? Just as an example, there's a Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah, an Agadita, But the Gemara says, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do with all of his free time? When he made the world, so he was busy making the world. But now that the world already exists, what does Hashem do all day? So the Gemara says he spends 2 hours a day making shiduchim, putting together couples. And then he spends a couple of hours playing with the Livyasan, playing with the whale, the Livyasan. Why would the Gemara tell us such a thing? Obviously, it's not to be taken literally. It must be some type of symbolic lesson. But what would be the point of having this within the Talmud? After all, the Talmud seems to be the record of the conversations of the sages in Babel from the 2nd to the 8th century, to the 5th century. There are conversations about the Mishnayos, about the Halachos. The Mishnayos don't have Agadita. Why does the Talmud have Agadita? What's the role of Agadita? What's the purpose of Agadita? Rav Kook, in his commentary to the Agada, in his commentary to Ein Yaakov, called Ein Ayah, addresses these questions. And Rav Kook makes the following suggestion. The same way our sages taught us how to live our life from the perspective of law, when to daven shacharis, when to say kriyat shema, our sages also gave us guidance in matters of ideology, worldview, and ethics. In matters of musar, in matters of hilchot deot, the laws of perspectives. And that area, Musar, Hilchot Deot, Hashkafas Olam, that is found in the Agada. Many of the basic principles of Musar and Hashkafas Olam are extremely deep, are secrets that Mekubalim, that great Kabbalists, masters of the inner wisdom of Torah, sensed. And so those secrets sometimes find their way in the language of symbolism and imagery, in pictures, in stories. But these stories, these legends, are more than legends. These are the guidance for Musar, for correcting our character, for Hashkafa, for perspective of the world, for Yesodos Emuna, for the principles of faith. And Rav Kook says there's a big difference between halacha and agada. In regards to halacha, in regards to law, we have to get it right. If I'm trying to understand the statement of the sages in regards to when I am to read Shema and when I can't read Shema, I better understand it correctly, because if I was wrong, then when I say Shema, I won't fulfill the mitzvah of Shema. In regards to the Agada, though, when a person studies the legends of the Talmud, there's not a correct answer. It could be that my suggestion as to what the message of this particular symbolic story may not be the right suggestion, but the application of the suggestion, the principles that emerge from my interpretation, are usually correct. The principles that emerge from the study of Agada are usually very, very important. And Rav Kook, in his introduction to Ein Ayah, decries the fact that in yeshivos, the curriculum neglects the study of Agada. The curriculum in most traditional Lithuanian mesnagdic yeshivos is to study Gemara, to study the Halacha. And when one gets to the sections of the Talmud that are stories and interpretations of psukim, that's sort of discarded as, that's agadita. We'll skip that. We'll get to the interesting things, to the Gemara, to the Halacha. Rav Kook says, we need to study the Agada. And especially our generation needs to delve into the Agada, to try to understand the lessons, the guidance that our sages were giving us with their fantastic and unusual images and stories. And this is in the introduction to Ein Ayah, the first page in the packet, It's the Hakdama, the introduction to Ein Hayah. Rav Kook suggests as follows. I put three checks next to this paragraph. Me ribui ha'esek b'talmud ha'musari. Were there to be an increase of involvement in the study of the ethics of Talmud, v'harchavas yidiasam, and a popularization of the knowledge of this segment, and a delving into the depth and understanding the depth, yisuknu hamidos. Says Rav Kook something very powerful. Just as a matter of historic record, it was a very brilliant and charismatic Rosh Yeshiva here in New York, Rav Yitzchak Huttner, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Chaim Berlin. Rav Huttner was a very volatile and brilliant man. He was actually a student of Rav Kook. It's an unknown or hidden fact. When he was a student, he hid it, right? When he learned in Yeshivas Chevron in the 1920s, he used to travel to Yerushalayim to learn from Rav Kook. In fact, there are legends that in Pachad Yitzchak, when Rav Huttner writes Hagra, he's not referring to Hagon or Beliyahu of Vilna, he's referring to Hagon or Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook. Rav Huttner, in the introduction to Pachad Yitzchak, writes that the reason why he dedicated his novelette, his insights into Agadah, is that there is a difference between the study of Agadah and the study of Halacha. In the study of Halacha, if I know that I'm supposed to say Shema by 9:04 and not 9:10, maybe I'll do it, maybe I won't do it. But when it comes to Agadah, if I study the lessons of what I'm supposed to feel, and I understand what I'm supposed to feel and what I'm supposed to believe, the distance between the feeling and the believing and the knowing is much shorter than the distance between the knowing and the doing. So when it comes to halacha, if I know what I'm supposed to do, it's still quite far to do it. But when it comes to agadah, which is about what I'm supposed to feel, what I'm supposed to believe, the distance between knowing and believing and feeling is much shorter. That's what Rav Kook writes here. Were we to study the Agadah, yisuknu hamidos, the midos would be fixed. Because were we to understand through delving into the depth of our sages what we are to feel and what we are to believe, very quickly we would do so. Yiras Hashem tahora titbases bioter. Pure fear of God would be very strongly established. Ha'ora zaru al divrei chazal ba'agadot, the light that was planted and that shines on the words of our sages in their Agadah, yifros oro al kol halavavos hasamos aleihem leiv, will spread its light on all the hearts that pay attention. V'hamikresh al talmid chacham she'ein tocham kivaram. Says Rav Kook, it's a great tragedy that yeshivos don't study the Agadah. Because the Agadah is filled with lessons of ethics, of ideology, of belief, of feeling. What do we study in yeshivos? We study halacha. We study what to do. And that creates the following bizarre situation. There can be an individual who's a giant in halacha, the best fellow in the shir, understands the Rambam and the Rashi and the Rishonim, but his ethics are terrible. His midos are abominable. He's such a nasty person. What a desecration of Hashem's name that causes. People see this person. He knows so much. So careful about the minutiae of halacha, which is so important. It's life. And yet so neglectful in terms of midos, an ideology and feeling. It's a chilul Hashem. It's a desecration of Hashem's name. It's a desecration of what the Jewish people are all about. It's a desecration of Torah. Says Rav Kook, if that giant in learning would be a giant in Agadah, would be a giant in understanding people, would be a giant in Musar, he wouldn't act that way. And Rav Kook says, our generation needs this more than ever. Al yidei hakdalas Torah zos v'ha'adarasa, through the study of this Torah, of the Agadah, hayu hadvarim ba'im lidei kach, ad shehamitzuyanim shebein gdolei chachmei Yisrael hayu kvar anshei lev, hayodim lidaber es oivim bashar, v'koach u'gvura yiyelahim, livarer es yisodei ha'emuna u'si'ifeha, neged kol hakamim aleha b'tanos yishanos o chadashos, v'ochlim esameinu b'tzido haruchani b'chol peh, v'davon leiv kol ish yirei Hashem, u'bal leiv yashar. Rav Kook points out that our generation struggles with attacks against the faith. We are an embattled nation, a nation under constant attack against belief, against faith, questions, why? Why does the Almighty reward, seemingly, the wicked, punish the righteous? There's such a prevalence of disbelief. Where are the answers? The answers, says Rav Kook, are found in the study of Agadah. The answers are found in the study of Jewish philosophy, because many of these questions are old questions. There are so many enemies in all the gates challenging faith, challenging observance. But the answers are here. They're in the Agadah. But unfortunately, our Talmidei Chachamim, they can't talk to our Jews who have all the questions. They can talk to the Jews who want to know how to put on tefillin. They can talk to the Jews who want to know the minutiae, the explanation of a word in the Rambam, which is extremely important. But then who's given the job of trying to answer the questions? If it won't be the giants, who's going to answer the questions? Says Rav Kook, we need to involve ourselves and delve into the study of Agadah with the same degree of depth, of challenge, of intellectual rigor as the study of Halakha. And then we will create Torah scholars who will be anshei ma'as ve'anshei ruach, men of deed but also men of spirit, men who have the answers that our nation is so desperately seeking. And that's why Rav Kook at age 26 started writing his commentary to the Agadah. He intended to write it on all of Ein Yaakov. He only got till the end of Masechta Shabbos. But he delved into the depths of the Agadah. And we'll find within the Agadah perhaps some guidance to these questions of that educational philosophy. So let's turn to the next page, to a Gemara in the Masechta Brachos, which is what our yeshiva is learning this semester. The first Mishnah in Masechta Brachos teaches us, when is the time to read Shema in the evening? When a Kohen who was impure would be allowed to eat Truma, that is, after he went to the mikvah and three stars came out, once it's night, then he can eat Truma. That's when everyone can say Shema. Says the Gemara, till when does one say Shema? Said Rabbi Eliezer, at Sof HaShmora HaRishona. One can say Shema till the end of the first watch. First what? So the Gemara explains. There are different groups of angels. And each group of angels has a part of the night that's its part. So there's one group of angels that sings during the first part of the night, and another during the second, and another during the third. And so Rabbi Elazar says one can say Shema until the end of the first group of angels. When it's the time for the shifting of the guards of the angels in heaven, that's it. No longer can a person say Shema. We don't pass it this way. That's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. So the Gemara wants to know how many groups of angels there are during the night. Are there three groups of angels? Or are there four groups of angels? In other words, is the night divided into three parts so that each part is 4 hours long? Or is the night divided into four parts and each part is 3 hours long? Says the Gemara. This is on the second line on page 2. At Sofa, Shmora, HaRishona, Dibri, Rabbi Eliezer, till the end of the first third of the night, this is what Rabbi Eliezer says. Ask the Gemara, Ikasavar, Rabbi Eliezer. What does Rabbi Eliezer think? Ikasavar, Shalosh, Mishmaros, Havia, Laila. If he thinks that the night has three groups of angels, Lema, Adalit shows. So if there are three groups of angels, each group of angels has 4 hours, let him just say, you can say Shema till the end of the fourth hour. Vikasavar, Arba, Mishmaros, Havia, Laila. And if he's of the opinion that there are four groups of angels, Leimad Shaloshos. So say, if there are four groups of angels, the night is divided into four parts, 12 hours into four, leaves 3 hours for each part. So say, you can say Shema till the end of the third hour. Gemara says, no, La'olam Kasavar Shalosh Nishmaros Havia Laila. Rabbi Eliezer feels that there are three groups of angels during the night. V'haka Mashmala. And this is what he's teaching us. Moving now to where the Ein Yaakov continues. It's a page later. V'ika mishmaros barakia, v'ika mishmaros ba'ara. That there are changes of the watch of angels in heaven, and there are changes of the watch here on earth. We can tell on earth when the angels are changing. The Tanya Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Rabbi Eliezer says, Shalosh mishmaros havia laila. There are three groups of angels during the night. And they're singing, Val kol mishmaru mishmar yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'shoei kari. And when each group of angels starts singing, God starts screaming like a lion, roaring. Shenemar, as it says, Hashem mi marom yishag, God from on high roars. Umi ma'om kadsho yitain kolo, and from his holy residence he gives his voice, Shov yishag. He's roaring, he's screaming, Al Navehu, because of his residence, because the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Page 4. We skipped one page. Thank you. Thank you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is screaming about each group of angels. They're singing. And Hashem is screaming that the Beis HaMikdash is unfortunately no longer in existence. And how do we know this? Simen L'davar, the sign. Mishmara Rishona, the first group of angels, Chamor, no air. That's when the donkeys are braying. Shnia, the second group of angels, Klavim Tzoakim, the dogs are howling. Shlishis, the third group of angels, Tino kionek mishdei imo, babies wake up to eat. Ve'isha mesaperes ba'ala, and wives wake up and they wake up their husbands to tell them something before daybreak. That's the Gemara. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar had to teach us that there are three groups of angels, and that you can tell when the angels are singing, when the dogs are howling, when the donkeys are braying, when the children are waking up. These are signs that in heaven the angels are singing. And different groups of angels create different signs on earth. And when God hears the angels singing, God starts screaming, Ay, I don't have a Beis HaMikdash. The angels are singing, but Ay, I don't have a Beis HaMikdash. What's this supposed to teach us? Asks Rav Kook. Many questions here. What's the difference if there are three groups of angels or four groups of angels? Gemara has a whole dispute. What does he think? Does he think there are three groups? Does he think there are four groups? What's the difference between three groups and four groups? And why would there be different groups of angels? Angels aren't humans. The verse says, the prophets, V'natati lecha mahalchin b'ina omdim ha'eleh, I've given you the ability to progress amongst those who stand. And the Midrash tells us, human beings are mahalchim. Human beings progress, but the angels stand. They're static. They don't go up, they don't go down, they're static the way they are. So what do you need different groups of angels for? They don't get tired. The angels could sing the whole night too. What's the Gemara teaching us? Groups of angels. So let's now turn back to page 2. To the second page in the packet. Actually, it's the first page, it's the second side. Page 2. It starts with the letter Hey in the commentary of Rav Kook, Ein Ayah. What's this Gemara teaching us? Three groups of angels, four groups of angels. I put three check marks next to the letter Hey on page 2. My kasavar belazar, ikasavar shalosh mishmaros havia laila, leimad arba shos. Ikasavar arba mishmaros havia laila, leimad shalosh shos. Says Rav Kook in his beautiful poetic Hebrew. Ra'isi lahavin bina b'divrei chachamim zikronam lebracha. I'd like to understand understanding. In the words of our sages, just mentioning them is reason to bless them. What's the root of this dispute? In shalosh mishmaros havia laila, o arba, three or four. Afal pi shi karei hadvarim gvohim ma'od. Let's know that whatever is in our sages is very, very high. The primary matters here are exalted. And I, in my poverty, don't understand just even a little bit of it, says Rav Kook. Im kolze, but despite that, al chazdo yisparach esha ein. On God's blessed kindness, I rely. Sheyichaneini deya, may God give me the understanding. Lahaskil ma'at, to comprehend a little bit. Ach efes katzehu, just the drop of the edge. Michachmas divrei kacham zichronam lebracha, from the wisdom of their holy words. V'nachkor tchila lefi sichleinu. So let's start with the following investigation. Al ikar shir hamalachim ma'in yano. Why would the angels sing? Why does God want angels to sing? Then we'll explain what's this dependent on, this dispute. If there are four groups or three groups, and we'll explain as follows. The deeper wisdom of Torah, the Mekubalim, Kabbalists, Bali Machshava, they explain that a person really is made up of three expressions. The soul expresses itself through three garments, through three manners: speech, thought, and action. A person, the Kabbalists say, really has three primary parts to his or her neshama. They are called nefesh, ruach, and neshama. Nefesh is the part of the soul which is expressed through maaseh, through deed. Ruach is the part of the soul that's expressed through feeling, through midos tovos, through good words, through speech. And neshama is expressed through the mind, through the intellect. The real source for this is a Medrash in Reishis Rabba and a Gemara in Masechta Brachos. The Medrash says that the neshama has five names. Nefesh, that's because of the blood. Ki hadam hu hanefesh. Ruach, shehi ola lamala v'yoredes lamata. The ruach, the wind that goes up and goes down. Uneshama, and this breath of life that God breathed into it. Chaya, that it lives, and Yechida. The Kabbalists explain that really those five names refer to five different aspects of the neshama. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, and Yechida. But the higher levels, chaya and Yechida, are so high that they're called oros makifin. Lights that are so high that they are above a person, not internalized within a person. The parts of the soul that are within a person, the oros pnimiyim, the inner lights, are nefesh, ruach, and neshama. And they are expressed through maaseh, dibur, another meaning of emotion, and machshava, and thought. You have this in the writings of Rav Chaim of Elazhin, who, as we know, was the ancestor of our Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik Chazal. That's here on the third page of the packet, Nefesh Achayim, Shar Aleph, Perek Yudalev. Rav Chaim of Elazhin says, Eilu Agimul Pchinos, these three expressions, Maaseh, Dibur, Machshava, action, speech, and thought, Hein Klala Bechinos Pnimiyos Shel Adam. This is all the inner expressions of a person. These are the expressions of the Oros Pnimiyim, of the inner lights. Shem Gimel Bechinos, there are three names for these parts of soul, Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. Ki Hamaaseh, doing good deeds, Humi Bechinas HaNefesh. It comes from the part of the soul called Nefesh. This is a very powerful concept to me. I happen to love the writings of Rav Shmuel Bornstein, the Shem Yishmuel. He's a great Hasidic Rebbe, the Sachet Shav Rebbe. He's Rebbe of Sachet Shav Chassidim from 1910 to 1924. Shmuel Bornstein keeps referring to this. There are three levels to the soul. Deed, maaseh, nefesh. Emotion and speech, ruach, dibur. And mind, machshav. It's not as if you need all three. I mean, we do need all three. But it's not as if one without the other is meaningless. One without the other is also something. Says the Shem Yishmuel again and again. If a person just does mitzvos, he doesn't feel anything. Doesn't understand anything. But she does the mitzvos. That's a very special person. That's an elevated nefesh. Hasn't yet reached ruach and neshama, but an elevated nefesh. A person who doesn't do mitzvos, unfortunately. But what a heart. Loves Jews. It's beautiful midos. Beautiful sensitivity to others. Doesn't have a holy nefesh yet. It has a holy ruach. And a person who understands Torah already has a holy neshama. Each piece on its own has great value. And the Shem Yishmuel, throughout his writings, whenever he finds three, he always says, why these three? It's nefesh, ruach, and neshama. So for example, in Parshas Lech Lecha, Hashem tells Avram, Lech Lecha, me'artzecha, mimolatzecha, mibeis avicha, leave your land, your birthplace, your father's house. Why these three things? Avram had to leave the nefesh that was in the wrong place, the ruach that was in the wrong place, the neshama that was in the wrong place. And then he was fixed. Then he reached the highest levels. That's what the Nefesh HaChaim says. The soul expresses itself in these three vehicles, these three garments. Action, speech, which is linked to emotion, and mind, intellect. Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. Going back to the Nefesh HaChaim. Ki amaseh mibchinas ha-nefesh. Deeds emerge from the Nefesh. As it says in the Pasuk, v'ha-nefesh asher taseh. And he's reading it not just the person who will do, but the nefesh does. Or hanefashos ha'osos, nefashos do. Har be'kayotze, there are many other proofs. And most of all, ki hadamu ha'nefesh. The nefesh is clothed within the blood. Sha'a nefesh shoro mislabesh b'dam ha'adam. Ulchen ikar mishkana bakave chu kulo dam. Umrutzus hadam b'chol pratei chelke avarim klei ha'masa. The nefesh is in the blood. That's why it's primarily in the liver and the kaveh, which is filled with blood. And it's the blood that animates the limbs of the body. If blood wouldn't reach a part of the body, that part would die. It can't do anything without blood. Blood is what animates action. And so nefesh, which is expressed through a holy act, that's within the blood. Going to the next paragraph, hadibur, speech. That's mibchinas ruach. That comes from ruach. Kamo shekasav, as it says, ruach Hashem diber bi. The wind of God is what animates me to speak. Ruach svasav, and with the wind from his lips. The pasuk says, man became nefesh chaya. Ukla says, ruach memalala, a ruach of words, a ruach that speaks. V'chein nire la'ayin, we all see it. Shebuchal dibur sha'adam otzi mipiv yotzei ruach v'hevel me'apeh. When a person speaks, a person emits wind, spirit. U'mishkan haruach yikaro hu balev. Wind comes from the heart. Ki ruach v'hevel hadibur yikaro v'reishiso hu olam me'alev. This is a lesson that the Kabbalists have, that speech is linked to emotion and feeling much more than action is and much more than thought is. Speech comes from the heart. Speech emerges together with midos, with feelings. And finally, machshava, thought, bechinas neshama. That's the neshama. Shehi ha-melamed, shehi ha-melamedes la'adam deya v'bina b'torah ha-kdosha, which is what teaches man understanding and comprehension in the Holy Torah. V'chein ikar mishkana hu b'moach, that's why it's primarily in the mind. Klei machshava, which is that vessel of thought. V'chein amu b'breishas rabba, that's the medrash I referenced. Chamisha shemos nikrula, there are five names for the soul. Nefesh ze hadam, nefesh, the blood. Ruach, which goes up and down. Neshama zo ha'ufya dibriyasa, which is dato machshavta, man's thought and understanding. We have this principle that there are three parts to the neshama: nefesh, ruach, and neshama, and they are expressed through maase, deed, dibur or hergesh, and machshava and thought. There are levels that are above this. There are five names to the soul. There are two levels, chaya and yechida, that are oros makifin. Lights that are so high that a person can't really comprehend them. They're beyond a person. Chaya yechida. What are these levels? The levels that are above a person, chaya yechida, are expressed not through action, not through emotion, not through thought, but through something higher than that, which is dveikus, attachment to Hashem. Dveikus v'Hashem, attachment to Kedusha, being attached to holiness, it comes from a point within the soul that's higher than action, higher than feeling, it's higher than understanding. It's a new expression of the soul. To be a davuk, to be attached to Hashem, uvo titvakun, be attached to Hashem. Dveikus v'Hashem, that's chaya and yechida, that's life itself. That's unification with Hashem. Yichud, to be one with Hashem. Yechida, to be one with Hashem. Chaya and Yechida are expressed through dveikus, through attachment with Hashem. Says Rav Kook, once we have these terms, there are groups of angels. What animates the angels? What animates the angels are the good deeds that Jews do on earth. Let's go back to page 2. What animates the angels are the mitzvos that hopefully we get to do. Going back to where we were up to. Hine matzinu b'merkava b'Yechezkel. When the Nabi Yechezkel describes God's chariot, page 2, the second page of the packet. Matzinu b'merkava b'Yechezkel. Shehem arba panim. The Nabi describes the angels having four faces. Pnei shor, the face of an ox. That's one side, the left side. Pnei aryeh, the face of a lion, the right side. Pnei nesher, the face of an eagle. Pnei adam, the face of a human. Afal pi shiyesh b'enyanim halalu divrei elokim chayim gvoim v'ne'edorim b'kodesh. There are holy words here. This is elevated. Asher eini kedai ledaber b'hem. I'm not worthy to speak about them, but Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach, with Hashem's help, we'll try to illuminate some of it, says Rav Kook. Daber ma'at, I'll say a little bit. I'll be pshatan shel dvarim.
Ki inei chazal lindu osanu. Our sages have taught us. Al pasuk on the verse, Be'elokim na'aseh chayu. Shebizman sheYisrael otzin ritzono shel makom, mosifin koach b'gvura shel ma'ala, v'hin makdishin u'mosifin koach be'elyonim, al yidei torasam v'avodasam. V'hilucham b'darchi Hashem yizbarach, v'hidavkam b'midosav, v'yidiyasam eshmo yizbarach.
The verse says, Be'elokim na'asechayim, which seems to imply that we will give power, as it were, to Elohim, to the heavenly realm. How is that possible? How could a human being give power? And that's the way Hashem made the world. Hashem made a spiritual world that the good deeds that people do on earth strengthens the spiritual forces on high. And the misdeeds that we do create damage to all those spiritual channels on high. Says Rav Kook, I see I'm going over time, so I'll do it outside. Rav Kook explains that the same way the soul is expressed through Maaseh, Dibur, and Machshava, action, speech, and thought, each one of those expressions animates a different group of angels. Why three groups of angels? Three groups of angels represent Maaseh, Dibur, and Machshava. When we do good deeds, when Jews do good deeds here on earth, when Jews express their nefesh, and the angels see the beauty of the mitzvos that Jews do, the angels of nefesh start singing. They're singing. It's beautiful. And then when there are Jews who say nice words, say kind words, daven beautifully with their hearts, avodah shebelev, service of the heart, Jews with midos tovos, Jews with beautiful, beautiful character, pleasant people, friendly people, people of faith, the angels of Ruach, they start singing. They start singing at the beauty of the midos of Klal Yisrael. They start singing about the beautiful tfilos of Klal Yisrael. And then, when the angels see the Chachmei Torah, the great Torah sages, filled with Torah, filled with knowledge of Hashem's wisdom, the angels of Machshava, the angels of Neshama, they start to sing. Oh, okay, good. So why do they sing at night? Says Rav Kook, when's the time for us to do mitzvos? By day. The day was given for us to do mitzvos, to learn Torah, to say words of tefillah, and to be kind to each other. And the night is the time for us to sleep and rejuvenate ourselves so that we have the energy to do it again the next day. So when we're doing mitzvos, the angels are quiet. When we're sleeping and the angels start examining all the mitzvos we did, they see the deeds that we did, and the midos tovos, the good attributes that we had, and the beautiful thoughts of Torah that we had. Then they see the shlemus, the perfection, and they sing. You can't sing when things are imperfect. Rav Kook says you can only sing from shlemus ha-haskala, from a complete sense of perfection. Ah, beautiful, it all fits, you sing. The angels sing when the people are sleeping, when they see the results of the Maaseh, the Dibur, and the Machshava. But when people are still doing it, and it's still in the process, it's not completed, the angels don't sing. So we understand why there should be three groups of angels. Why would there be four groups of angels? Says Rav Kook, the fourth group of angels corresponds to Dveikus, the attachment with Hashem, what he calls Yediyas Hashem, the knowledge of Hashem. The fourth group of angels is animated by tzaddikim, righteous people who, they're all about Hashem. There are some righteous people, that's all they're thinking about. There was a Jew, wasn't a well-known righteous man, he lived in Borough Park, his name was Rabbi Yehuda Horowitz. with the Tichina Rebbe. His Yahrzeit was a couple of weeks ago. Yehuda Horowitz was a very special man. He was a descendant of Rabbi Naftali of Rapshit, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes. Very quiet, very, very hidden person. He was once talking to his Hasidim. He said, a great Avera. What could be a great Avera? We read that Yaakov Avinu was afraid when he came back to Israel after being with Lavan. He was afraid that maybe Yigro Machet, that sins would cause him not to be the recipient of all the wonderful blessings Hashem gave him in Parshas Vayetze. He said, well, what could Yaakov Avinu have been afraid about? And maybe for 5 minutes he didn't see Hashem's name in front of his eyes? Chas v'shalom. Yaakov Avinu wouldn't have that affair either. There's some people, you know, living on a level of dveikus, just attached to Hashem, thinking about Hashem constantly. And to think for 5 minutes not to be thinking about Hashem is, chas v'shalom, what a terrible affair. That's the fourth group of angels. The fourth group of angels is animated by dveikus, by attachment to Hashem. Says Rav Kook, each one of us sometimes has an experience of dveikus. Maybe it's at Ne'ilah when we're saying Hashem Hu Elokim. Maybe it's at a moment of understanding an unbelievably deep concept of Torah, such a sense of wow, of attachment to Hashem. So each one of us can sometimes have dveikus, attachment to Hashem. And it's a very high expression of the neshama of the soul. Tzaddikim, everything they do is with dveikus. When a tzaddik shakes lulav, he's so attached to Hashem. When a tzaddikas gives tzedakah, it's all dveikus, it's all attachment to Hashem. When a tzaddik learns Torah, it's kedusha, it's tahara, it's purity, it's holiness. Says Rav Kook, for the tzaddikim, there are only three groups of angels, because the fourth group, dveikus, makes its way into all the other groups. Into machshava, dibur, and maaseh, it's all performed with dveikus. All the actions of mitzvos are done with dveikus. All the midos tovos are done with dveikus. All the tfilos, all the learning of Torah, is a sense of dveikus. Our Rebbe, the Rebbe of our yeshiva, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, sometimes talk about this dveikus. Speak about it especially after the loss of his wife, and his mother, and his brother, who all passed away within a short distance, one after the other. And he would say the pasuk in Tehillim, Lule Torascha Sha'ashuai Azavadati Ba'ani. If not for the Torah of Hashem, which is my delight, David HaMelech says, I'd be lost. And the Rav would say in his drashos, he said, sometimes I'm learning and I feel that someone is hovering over my back and saying, Beryl, that svara, that's not it. That thought, that's it. But when he'd be learning, he'd feel the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu there with him. It's a sense of dveikus, of attachment to Hashem. Learning with Hashem, as it were. That the machshava, the neshama, was in a state of dveikus. Tfilah, in a state of dveikus. Masa mitzvos, in a state of dveikus. So the Gemara argues, are there three groups of angels, or are there four groups of angels? In other words, is heaven primarily motivated and animated by the tzaddikim, who only have three groups, because everything is done with dveikus, everything is done with attachment to Hashem, so there's only three groups of angels? Or is heaven motivated by the simple people who hardly ever reach a state of dveikus? They reach a state of dveikus on a Yom Kippur. They reach a state of dveikus from an outstanding class, but normally they don't. What animates heaven? Is it the small group, the high, extremely high quality, or is it the large group? And Says Rav Kook, he thinks that both are true. Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim Chayim. This opinion and that opinion are both the words of the living God. It depends if we think about Hashem from the perspective of Midas Hadin, the strict attribute of justice, or if we think about Hashem from the perspective of Midas HaChesed, the attribute of kindness. If we think about Hashem from the attribute of justice, of what's fair, of what's right, we'd have to say that the tzaddikim, that's the ideal, that's what's fair, that's what animates the world. Shalosh Mishmaros Havi Alayla, there are three groups of angels. But if we think about it from the attribute of chesed, of God's kindness, of God's mercy, so from the perspective of God's chesed, he cares more about more than about less. He cares about popularizing Judaism more than preserving it in its most pristine and purest form. And so from the perspective of Midas HaChesed, Arba Mishmaros Havi Alayla. The simple people who only rarely get to Dveikus. The Dveikus doesn't permeate their Machshava, Dibur, and Maaseh. They're the ones who animate the spiritual world. So when I read this, I thought about it. How could I apply it? As a teacher, the privilege to also be an administrator, this is a constant challenge. Do we design classes for an elite? The best student in the class will gain. And the other students, at least they'll know what to strive for. Or do we design classes that everyone will gain, including the weakest, those with the most difficulty intellectually? But then we'll sacrifice the elite. The elite won't be challenged as much as they should be challenged. Does a person tell his students, sit and learn, become a gadol be Yisrael, know all of Shas? Or does a person tell his students, you know, there may be 500,000 Orthodox Jews in America and 5.2 million Jews who don't know the Aleph Beis? It's true, it would be nice to sit and learn, but there are all these Jews who don't know anything. So go out and teach. And he'll say, well, you know, then I won't reach the higher level. But more people will reach a lower level. So what is it? Is it Shalosh Mishmaros Havi Alayla? Should we focus on producing the elite and push the elite? Or is it Arba Mishmaros Havi Alayla? That spirituality is primarily determined by more who do less. And that's greater in the eyes of God than fewer who can accomplish more. Rav Kook says this depends on whether it's Midas Hadin or Midas HaChesed. We know that in Parshas Lech Lecha we read the Rashi says, V'heyei bracha et b'cha chosmin. We complete our prayers with Magen Avraham, the merit of Abraham. So many explain. That is, at the end of history, Ikvasa de Mashiach, when we're close to the times of Mashiach, the focus has to be the nature of Abraham, the Midas HaChesed. And if the Midas HaChesed, if we're looking from the perspective of Chesed, we have to make the choice that it's greater to have more who do less and to have less who can accomplish more. Because from the perspective of Midas HaChesed, better more with a little bit. That's a greater chesed, that more people get to taste from Torah than a smaller group that reaches a high, rarefied ideal. When I told my father this lesson of Rav Kook, my father told me that his Rebbe, the Rav Zatzal, Rav Soloveitchik, used to say, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Ha'amidu Talmidim Harbe, have many students. But in the Avostri of Nasan, it's actually a machlokas, it's a dispute. There are some opinions that say don't have many students, but have good students. Make sure that they are accurately conveying what the teacher is teaching. And the Rav Zatzal said that his uncle, Rav Belvel Soloveitchik, he felt that the halacha was like the Avos Rav Nasan, have good students. And the Rav Zatzal thought that the halacha was like Pirkei Avos, better to have more students. Better to have more students, even though we sacrifice to some degree some of the integrity and quality But at least that's the Midas HaChesed, that more get to enjoy the Torah and Mitzvot. So hopefully we should all merit to spread Torah, to learn Torah, and to serve Hashem.